TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Welcome in, Raised by Wolves, another preseason edition of the podcast, but we've got some real fake basketball to talk about. As there have been three preseason games since you and I last spoke, Manny. So we've got a lot to get into, including a shot chart that looks incredibly different than anything that I think anyone has ever watched basketball in Minnesota is used to. Jarrett Culver looking like he belongs on an NBA floor, which is a good thing, and just trying to figure out what this rotation is going to look like. But I think that we do have to start with the shot chart as being the most jarring difference between the old Timberwolves and the current version of the Timberwolves, because you can look at the shot chart from any of their first three games. You can look at the shot chart from their first three games combined. It doesn't matter. There's a lot of empty area in between the paint and the three-point line, Manny.
And really, if you think about like the mid-range shot has basically defined the history of the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Sure.
I mean, when you go back to the Flip Saunders days, and obviously for a decade, the Timberwolves had some success as with Flip Saunders leading the way. They made the playoffs 8 years in a row. They got to the Western Conference Finals in 2004. But for many of those years, their offense was built around, with Kevin Garnett and those guys, they were built around mid-range shots, those 17 to 19-foot jumpers.
Yeah.
And at that time, you could have success by taking a lot of those shots because the league hadn't really changed and evolved into what it is today. Then you fast forward to, you know, Sam Mitchell and then Tom Thibodeau. We saw a lot of the same stuff.
Sure.
And now we're finally seeing something different for the first time really in the history of the franchise. It's really refreshing.
And it's not just something different. It's so drastically different.
Yeah.
Where it is, I mean, they shot 49 three-pointers against the Golden State Warriors, and albeit an exhibition game, a game in which the result does not matter, but still, 49 three-pointers would have been by far the most that they had attempted in any single game last season. And then they followed up with, or they had 39 three-pointers attempted in the Phoenix game two nights before, and 36 against Maccabi Haifa, which, take it for what it's will. I mean, the starters only really played a quarter in that game, so I don't know how accurate numbers from that contest are going to be, but this team looks much, much different.
Yeah, they do, and I think it's a good thing. I think that it shows that they are aware of where the league is, has headed for the last probably five to 10 years, and they're finally trying to catch up, and they recognize that, look, we cannot compete. We cannot expect to build this team into a contender if we're still playing dinosaur basketball. You just have to be able to grow and evolve with the league. And, you know, I mean, Gerson Rosas, you give him credit, but, you know, he's coming from the Houston Rockets, so he's coming from a very analytics-driven franchise. But also, you know, I got to give Ryan Saunders a lot of credit, too, for being willing to sort of buy into this, too, after coaching under Tom Thibodeau for the last couple of years and sort of just being a part of what the offense was at that time. And now Ryan is getting a chance to really sort of buy into what this new look of what this team is going to do offensively. And it's really refreshing. It's good to see.
Yeah, and the one thing I'll say where there's going to be growing pains here.
Yeah.
Because the style of which they're playing involves a lot more three-pointers attempted. But as of right now, they don't have a lot of guys that can make those shots. And that's going to be something that's going to lead to a lot of probably frustrating night if you're a fan of this basketball team. And there are going to be some nights that are far better than others. There are going to be nights where it feels like they can't miss. There are going to be other nights where it feels like they can't buy a basket. That's just how it's going to go with this style. They're only shooting 29% from three through the first three preseason games. They've attempted over 40 three-pointers per game, and they've only made 12 per game, which making 12 per game is an improvement, but they're also shooting way more of them. So it's I understand where there might be some frustration from Wolves fans this year.
Well, and I think what you have to hope for over the course of this season is that guys just improve, because they're not, you know, it's going to be really hard to make a roster move to try and improve the three-point shooting right now when you consider where this team is at financially. But I think what they just have to hope for is that, you know, Jake Layman can develop into a really good three-point shooter, that Josh Okogie can improve as a three-point shooter, you know, that Jared Culver can improve, that Andrew Wiggins can improve. We know Cat is really the only guy on this team that can make three-pointers at a good clip.
It's really interesting to me that the Wolves are playing this style and their best shooter is a guy that's 6'10", 6'11".
Yeah.
Because, that their best shooter is a big guy. Yeah. Because I don't know that we've ever seen that before. We've seen teams launch threes. We've seen teams spread the floor and do this. But they've never had the personnel that the Wolves have had. They've never had the offensive weapon quite like Karl Anthony Towns, in part because we really haven't seen one, at least not for a long time during this style of play. So I'm just really curious to see how that plays out when your best three-point shooter is also the guy who you have to run everything through, but he's a big.
How many three-pointers a game do you think Cat is going to end up taking this year? Because that's with him being who he is as a player and with him being a big guy, it's in some ways it's kind of a fine line to walk because we know he can shoot threes at a good clip, but we know he's also very good in the post and can score. I mean, he can score from pretty much almost anywhere on the floor.
Yeah.
But I also wonder, because he is their best three-point shooter, I wonder if they will fall in love with him taking almost an egregious amount of three-pointers because he's really the only guy on the roster that's worth a damn at shooting them right now.
I mean, it depends what you consider egregious. I wrote before training camp opened up that I think Carl's going to break the Timberwolves record for most three-pointers attempted in a season. I think Robert Covington might too.
Mm-hmm. But although that's a pretty low bar, right?
it's 505, and over an 82-game stretch, you would need to average like 6.4, I believe, to hit that. I think Carl's going to be above that. I think he's going to be 7 to 8 a game, and it all then depends on if he stays healthy, which Carl has the track record to show that he can. So I think that he's going to be around 550 three-point attempts, maybe between 550 and 600. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a high number for him.
And that's going to be something to watch with Gerson Rosas and his front office in how they try and sort of restructure and build this team over the next couple of years is, are they going to, you know, when the draft comes around, are they going to start drafting guys that are more three-point shooters? Are they going to start pursuing guys in free agency that might be more three-point, you know, perimeter-centric guys that can shoot threes and, you know, rather it's a power forward, stretch four type or a wing player or you know, they're, whatever direction they decide to go with the point guard position. Is that going to be a guy that can hit from outside the arc a little bit more often? I mean, it's going to be really fascinating to see sort of how they structure this roster because, like you said, right now this team is not built to be a good three-point shooting team. For all the credit that they get for going in this direction of wanting to shoot more threes, this roster is not really constructed to do that at a high success rate. So the question is going to be, okay, what sort of things do they do over the next couple of years to try and mold this roster to be better suited to play that style of basketball?
Yeah, that's what the future is going to have to tell at some point. We don't know yet when we're going to get there. And this is a team that could look drastically different from year to year right now because they've got so many guys that are on one-year deals, and you don't know what the future is going to hold. But they are picking the style over personnel. This is who they want to be.
Yeah.
They don't have the personnel to run it effectively or super effectively right now, but at some point they're confident that they're going to get there, and that's why they're running this type of style. That's why they're going to be bombing away from three. That's why it's going to look this way because they're picking, this is the scheme we're going to run. It's going to work at some point. It might not be right now. In fact, it probably won't be right now, but we're putting out the blueprint for what we want to be.
It kind of reminds me of a few years ago when Brad Stevens first got to the Boston Celtics and they were shooting a lot of threes. They weren't a great three-point shooting team by percentage and everything, and they didn't, at that time, they didn't really have a roster constructed to be able to do that sort of thing, but they were still shooting a lot of threes. And, I mean, it worked for them. They had success. They had mild success. I wonder if this is going to be the same sort of thing. Like, it's just, we know this team isn't built for this, but this is the type of, this is what we want the identity of this team to be, and eventually we're going to get there, and we're going to have to take our lumps early on. It's going to look ugly, but this is the direction that we're going.
I also think that I know that this team is playing fast right now. I think they might be the fastest team in the league in terms of pace. They might lead the league in pace. They are going to just blaze up and down the floor.
That's amazing.
There are only
amazing to think about.
A handful of possessions from the entire preseason. I'm quite literally talking five or less that I can think of through the first three preseason games that the ball was not across half court by time that it was at 20 on the shot clock. They are flying. They are trying to get into things as quick as possible. They are taking the first good look. They're not passing up open shots. This team is going to move offensively.
So what you're saying is when the Timberwolves and Kings play each other, it might be the fastest game in terms of pace that we maybe have ever seen.
It's going to be up there. It's going to really be unbelievable. They're trying to lead the league in pace. And I haven't watched what the Kings quite look like yet with Luke Walton in charge there now. But
that's right. It is a different coach. And
I would imagine they'll still be relatively fast, but the Wolves are going to just try and run people out of the building here.
Well, and I would imagine if you got De'Aaron Fox
driving your Ferrari,
you gotta play fast. What's your takeaway from what you've seen from this team defensively in these three preseason games?
I think that when Vegas sets the total for over-under, like points per game, total team totals or game totals, the Wolves are going to have some high ones. Because the flip side of playing so fast offensively is the other team's going to get a lot of possessions too.
Yeah.
And I think that this team could struggle defensively. And there are moments when Towns is off the floor and Karl Towns is not thought of as a great defender, is not a great defender. But without him, they are really, really small. And that's another question that we can get to later in this episode about the rotation. But they are really, really small without him, and they're really not good defensively without him. And it's not necessarily because he's a great defender, but he gives you size, and they really don't have many other options to give you size. So it could be really ugly at times for them on the defensive end of the floor.
Are you seeing anything different schematically defensively that they're doing from the Tibbs days, or is it
They're still making tweaks.
Okay.
They have a defensive philosophy that they are still trying to tinker with, but it is different than the Tibbs days. There's more switching, but they're still trying to tweak things and tinker with things and figure out what's exactly going to work the best. And I think a lot of that is with the bigs, because they have a significant problem there, especially, and Carl's not a great defender, but Carl gives you size, and you don't have anyone else on that roster that really does give you size, because Noah Vonleh doesn't seem to necessarily play as how big he is, and I think that could be a problem too. So, and maybe some of this is solved when Jordan Bell gets back. Jordan Bell might play tonight against the Pacers. He hasn't played in the first three games, but we'll see what happens or what the rotation turns into or how much time he shares on the floor with Carl, and those questions still have to be answered.
Perimeter defense, what's your take on that? I mean, we know how good Roko is on that with that aspect.
But here's part of the thing, is that they're starting Robert Covington at the four, and they don't have – he can guard, obviously, one through four most likely.
Yeah.
But they don't have anyone else that can guard a four. So you limit him –
yeah.
If you start him at the four in that starting lineup and say it's Travion Graham or Jake Layman, those guys are going to struggle to guard up a position. Well, Travion Graham can a little bit. That's, I think, why we've seen him start the first couple of games, because it helps Covington be able to be more flexible defensively than Jake Layman, per se, because Travion Graham is a stronger guy. It could be tough, because if he is guarding fours exclusively, he's not able to do really what he does best, and that's just kind of be your shutoff guy on the perimeter. You don't have the opportunity in that starting lineup to make him the guy that can just go be your ball stopper, stop the initiator of offense on the other team, and I think that could be a problem.
So do you think if Jordan Bell returns to the lineup that might help that a little bit, in that it might force them to put Covington more at the three a little bit more often rather than exclusively at the four?
I don't think that he can be exclusively at the floor. At the four, I don't think that can be successful.
Yeah.
And again, maybe this is solved when Jordan Bell gets back. Maybe Jordan Bell's in that starting lineup, because I think that they are going to slot him above Noah Vonleh in terms of the big rotation. And that's another question, because I don't know that Gorgie's going to be in this rotation. He got off the bench a little bit against Maccabi Haifa in that third preseason game. He played in the first half.
But how much of that was because Jordan Bell didn't play?
And Naz Reid got off the bench before Gorgui Dieng did against Golden State Warriors. Now, I think that part of that is Gorgui is a bit of a known commodity. Like, they know what Gorgui can do. Mm-hmm. They're not going to learn anything about Gorgui in this preseason. They don't know what Nas can do. And I think that that's part of the reason why Nas is playing a little bit more. But I don't know what this rotation is going to look like. And it's hard to squeeze four bigs into a rotation, right? Especially when you're playing this style.
Yeah, that's the frustrating part is, like, because you're paying Gorgui Jang,
16.2 this year.
16.2, and the fact that you're at this point where you just can't really put him in the rotation, where he just doesn't figure to be a big part of the team right now is just, like, and it's just like, well, what do you do? Because you still got this season and next season left on that deal.
Yeah.
And if he's not playing, it just makes it even more and more difficult to even try and move that deal. I mean, it's already going to be hard because it's just an insane amount of money. But, I mean, if he's not playing to try and boost any sort of hope for trade value with him, I mean, you're just kind of stuck mm-hmm. with, you know, just sort of gutting out that contract and just hoping for the best. And, you know, and obviously injuries can come into play, and then maybe then Gorgui finds his way on the floor. But that's a very, very tough situation.
Yeah. So I don't know what that rotation is going to look like. Trevion Graham, I think, is going to have a bigger part in the rotation than we had maybe anticipated before training camp started. Jake Layman, obviously, going to be a big part. Jarrett Culver going to be a big part. I'm curious if Jalen Noel finds his way on the floor. He's been getting some minutes with NBA guys
mm-hmm.
throughout the past couple of preseason games, at least. Not so much in Phoenix, but he's been playing a little bit more. And I think a lot of it hinges on just how comfortable Jarrett Culver is, because he has seemed comfortable at point guard, like just initiating the offense and being the lead ball handler. He seemed most comfortable doing that. And that's something that I didn't necessarily expect to be the case, but it mm-hmm. seems to be true right now.
That's encouraging. That's really encouraging. Even if he's not going to be the quote unquote point guard of the team, the fact that he can do that and be a play initiator and a distributor, I mean, that's a good sign. That's a sign of a guy that can be really, really good and really, really valuable down the line for you.
Yeah. Well, he has to be. If this is going to work, you have to hit on your draft picks. And Jarrett Culver looks apart right now. Like, he looks like he belongs on an NBA floor.
What's the most impressive thing you've seen from him so far? Is it that?
I think it's his feel for the game, because I do have my worries about his shooting. It mm-hmm. looks like he's got a hitch in his shot. And that was pretty evident. It wasn't quite as evident on TV or on camera as it was watching him in person. Like, he took a corner three against Maccabi Haifa. It was the opposite corner from where the media sits, and had a very, very clean look at it, and there's a hitch in that shot. Mm. And that's something that I think should be a little concerning. But everything else he does at an NBA level, at the very least. He's got a very good feel for the game. He can pass. He can get to the rim. He can finish at the rim okay. But the shot is something that worries me. And I do think he'll be a good defender, too, especially if he's going to be someone that's more of a combo guard in terms of one or two versus a two or a three. I think positionally he fits a little bit better on the defensive end of the floor.
He just looks, from the highlights that I saw in the Golden State game, he just looks like he's very comfortable.
Yeah.
And that's a really, really good sign.
He had some jitters, I think, it looked like, against Phoenix. That first, his first stint wasn't that good. He had an mm-hmm. air ball. Like, he looked really nervous. And even Ryan Saunders said, you know, it's different when you put on that NBA jersey for the first time and it's a real game jersey and not a practice jersey. Like, it feels different. So I understand that. And after that, he has looked really comfortable. I just think that it's a little concerning that there is that hitch in his shot, and it's something mm-hmm. he's going to have figured out.
What's your best guess on how much he's going to play early on in the season? I mean, forget about, you know, if he's going to start or come off the bench or whatever, but in terms of just, like, playing time, with what you've seen so far, what's your best guess on, like, how much playing time on the floor he's actually going to get on a nightly basis?
I would guess he's got to get between 25 and 30 minutes a night. You can't go up for that guy and have him look like this in the preseason and then just not play him enough.
Yeah.
Especially when you're a team that, let's face it, this is a team that could lose 50 games.
Mm-hmm.
It's a team that very well could lose 50 games. You have to give him every opportunity to be successful. And I do think that they will. And I think that he's going to be a guy that fits in. And he's going to be up and down this year, because rookies are almost always just that. It's very rare where you have a rookie come in that is just lights out.
Yeah.
I don't expect Jarrett Culver to come in and be lights out. I don't put that on any rookie ever, to expect that of them. So he's going to be up and down, but I think that he is going to be a very good NBA player. That pick looks like a win right now. I realize he's done nothing of consequence in the NBA, but he looks the part, and that matters, because how often, especially here, have we seen guys come in and just not look the part right away, and you still have to try and hold out hope, and this doesn't feel like that at all.
Wes Johnson was that guy, right? Mm-hmm. You got to look at him early on.
And Chris Dunn, I would have to imagine, was that
Chris,
guy, too.
Chris Dunn, yeah. I mean, at least offensively, Chris Dunn was like, oh, my. It was like, oh, my God, this is. Now, his defense, he did have kind of an impact defensively, but part of that was just he was just sort of like the de facto best defender on the team just because the team was just so bad that year on that end of the floor. Last one for you. How has number 22 looked?
Number 22 has done some things that make you think he's making progress.
Okay.
Number 22, there was a play against Maccabi Haifa, and he had the ball at about 21 feet out, and he took a dribble and a step back to get behind a three-point line.
Okay.
And that's something that I don't think I had ever seen Andrew Wiggins do, no matter the situation.
Okay.
And I am more than willing to call that progress, Manny.
Okay. That sounds... That sounds encouraging.
I'm not saying that I am buying land on Wiggins Island, but I'm saying if you're in the market, now would be a good time to buy. Buy low on Wiggins, and this might be the time. I'm not saying he's going to blow people away, and I'm not saying it's going to look great right away, because there are going to be adjustments, and I have my concerns if this team starts off, 7-15, if things don't revert for certain people, and he's one of the people that I would be concerned about reverting back to old habits. But there's a chance that he looks better this year.
So what you're saying is basically it's worth an eyeball emoji.
One. It's one. Like 1.5 eyeball emojis out of 5. But he's taken steps. He's
okay.
He's making an effort that, in a way, in terms of trying to adjust his game, that I don't know has been made before. I can't speak on that because I haven't been here for his entire career. I've been here for seven-eighths of a season I was here.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't speak on that, but I can speak on it. This looks different than it did what I saw last year.
Okay. I'm good with that.
What do you need to see from him?
A lot. I mean, I need to see...
I need details.
Well, to me, as we talked about the shot chart, and what I want to see is more of what you were talking about, where he takes a dribble in, then he takes a step back and takes a shot from the outside.
Yeah.
Like, that needs to become a regular thing for him. And it needs to become a thing where it's like he doesn't even... It doesn't even become like... It just happens naturally for him. And I don't know if it ever will get to that point, but what I need to see from him is just a full understanding that, Andrew, these 19-foot jumpers, you hit them at about a 29 or 30% clip. That's just unacceptable. You can't take those shots.
I will say it was concerning that he picked up 5 fouls in the first half of their first preseason game, but I'm not going to dwell on that too much. 5 fouls is a lot and a half.
Could that mean at least that he's a little bit more engaged on defense?
I don't know. I'm not.
Because there's 2 ways you could look at that. I mean, you could look at that as, okay, he's just playing recklessly on that end of the floor where he's just swiping at the ball and whatever. But if he's more engaged on that end of the floor and not falling asleep like he does seemingly 90% of the time on that end of the floor,
yep,
that could be an encouraging sign too.
Yeah, I think that we're going to see a better version of Andrew Wiggins this year than we have in the years past.
All right, that's a step in the right direction. I'm good with that.
I think that's where we're at.
All right.
I don't know how much better, but I think it's going to be at least marginally better than what we've seen.
Again, the bar has been set very low.
Yes, very true.
All right, that's all I got for you.
Yeah, I'm good with that. They play again tonight in Indianapolis. No TV, no radio. I don't know if there's TV on the other side, so you actually might have difficulty finding this one if you go through other avenues other than just cable. Then they play Thursday. That game will be on Fox Sports North in Milwaukee, so be sure to check that out, and We'll talk to you next time. You can find the podcast on the Score North mobile app. You can find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your listening stuff. We're there. And we will talk to you later this week.